the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good Thursday morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West Farm City Newsday. Again, we are jumping straight into today's programs, always starting off with our headlines. First up, Brian German is talking with us about USDA launching a new website that features a way to help farmers hire workers. Taylor Hillman has this week's Almond Update talking about off-ground harvest, and I'm going to go ahead and start off today's show with a follow-up report regarding the China seed story from yesterday's show. China is now asking for the packages from the U.S. to investigate those unsolicited seed mailings. The China seed saga continues as Chinese officials are asking for packages from the U.S. to investigate. In a daily briefing with the media, a spokesperson with China's Foreign Affairs Ministry on Tuesday stated that China's state-owned postal service has contacted the U.S. Postal Service asking it to send fake packages to China for investigation. The spokesperson noted China is a member of the Universal Postal Union, which prohibits plant seeds as imports or in transit for member countries. USDA considers the practice agricultural smuggling and is investigating. USDA and the CDFA urge residents to report the packages to state agricultural officials. Tom Orvis, who's the governmental affairs director for Stanislaus County Farm Bureau, says,
I mean, look at the rules and regulations our farmers have to jump through when we export to other countries, and this just shows up in the mail. You know, it could be something as simple as poppy seeds or something like that, a flower, but at the same time, California's agriculture industry is way too large and way too valuable, and too many people are involved to risk exposing it to an invasive pest or invasive seed of some sort. I mean, why do we have the dogs at the airports running around the carousels to check people's packages? We want to stop things before they get into the country, and maybe somebody's tried to find a different way to get in our country.
NAFB contributed to this report. Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Danielle Leal. And now here's Brian German with back-to-back agriculture reports.
As produce safety rule inspections resume, there are some COVID-related issues that need to be considered. Director of Regulatory Affairs and Food Safety for the Western Agricultural Processors Association, Priscilla Rodriguez, described some COVID safety measures ag operations may want to consider when preparing for an inspection.
You want to make sure that you are communicating what your policies are related to, one, food safety, and as well as COVID-19. So you want to make sure that you're providing that information. Best time to provide that information would probably be when they reach out to you the week before, letting them know, hey, these are my policies. Whatever it is that you are doing to ensure the prevention of the spread of COVID-19, you want to make sure that you're providing that information, as well as obviously those practices while inspectors at your facility, making sure you have that 6-foot distancing, face masks. Also, because there will be a time during the inspection where they will have to look at your documentation, you want to make sure that you provide that documentation and allow for that 6-foot distance at the same time. So having your documentation prepared beforehand because of that reason, right, having it all on one table so that you're not passing information back and forth. You want to both protect yourself, and the inspectors obviously want to be protected as well. So having that prepared documentation that they will be reviewing, so the required documents, having those available, accessible on a table set out for the inspector, that would be the best way to minimize that exposure.
The USDA has announced new website features to assist with the hiring of agricultural workers. USDA Secretary Sunny Perdue recently announced new features of the farmers.gov website designed to help facilitate the employment of H-2A workers. The new features include a real-time dashboard enabling farmers to track the status of their eligible employer application and visa applications for temporary non-immigrant workers. Farmers can also track time-sensitive actions taken as part of the evaluation of temporary labor applicants. In an effort to make the website more efficient, the updates will also provide easy access to the Department of Labor's Foreign Labor Application Gateway. Farmers will now also be able to access all application forms online. Secretary Perdue noted the new website features are in line with his overall goal of making the USDA the most effective and efficient department within the federal government. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Thanks, Brian. And in more agriculture news, Joe Biden's presidential campaign released Biden's plan for Rural America yesterday. The plan says Biden will pursue a rural economic development strategy that, quote, partners with rural communities to invest in their unique assets. The plan's goal is to give young people more options to, quote, live, work, and raise the next generation in rural America. The plan seeks to pursue a trade policy, quote, that works for American farmers. That includes standing up to China to, quote, negotiate the strongest possible position. Biden also plans to support beginning farmers by expanding the Obama administration's microloan program for new and beginning farmers. Biden also wants to partner with farmers to make American agriculture first in the world to achieve net zero emissions, giving farmers new sources of income in the process. Biden's plan also calls for promoting ethanol, including investing $400 billion in clean energy research. The plan also says Biden will, quote, use every tool at his disposal, including the federal fleet and the federal government's purchasing power, to promote and advance renewable energy, ethanol, and other biofuels. This report was provided by the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. And it's time for us to head out for a quick break at the moment, but we'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news, including our livestock report, when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West, and now here's Brian German.
The Animal Agriculture Alliance has announced a new effort to help provide community members with a better understanding of animal agriculture. The recently launched Animal Ag Allies program is meant to empower farmers, ranchers, and veterinarians to be outspoken advocates for agriculture online and within their communities. The program provides opportunities for networking, training, and continuous development of issue expertise and communication skills. The Animal Ag Allies program consists of online training and a private forum to discuss engagement strategies and emerging issues. The training modules provide overviews of the multiple sectors of animal agriculture, as well as how to address the most pressing issues facing the industry and how to better engage with the public. The Alliance is currently seeking participants to enroll by Friday, August 7th, with a program interest form available at animalagalliance.org. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
Ag-based advisory committees play a significant role of counsel to both the Agriculture Secretary and U.S. Trade Representative regarding ag trade matters. For instance,
the negotiations of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, we were in close communication with the committees and with the individual members of the committees with respect to their positions on the negotiations for their various sectors. And then ultimately, they prepared a report in which they provided their support for entry into the USMCA.
And USDA Foreign Agricultural Service Administrator Ken Isley says member appointments were made recently for both the Agricultural Policy Advisory Committee and the six commodity or sector-specific Agricultural Technical Advisory Committees.
We try to look at membership and provide that balance in terms of expertise and geographic representation.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, in today's livestock news, the American Farm Bureau Federation has released its final report on priorities for milk pricing reform, and they're calling for more democracy and a more equitable program for dairy farmers. A Farm Bureau Federal Milk Marketing Order Working Group worked for a year to examine the system and develop recommendations to modernize the current FMMO system. Among AFBS priorities is amending the Ag Marketing Agreement Act to allow dairy farmers to directly vote on federal milk marketing order issues. Currently, only dairy farmers who are independent and not members of cooperatives may cast individual ballots. Cooperatives may allow their members to vote independently, but then lose their ability to block vote on behalf of their non-participating members. AFBF supports allowing modified block voting, which would allow co-op members to vote independently while allowing cooperatives to cast ballots for farmers who choose not to cast an individual ballot. Other recommendations in the final report include expanding price discovery and examining alternative ways to price fluid milk and improve risk sharing between farmers and processors. Well, beef processing plants are approaching normal slaughter rates once again. With more on that story, here's Gary Crawford.
U.S. beef processing plants are continuing to rebound from all of the problems they had this spring. USDA livestock analyst Shale Shagham told us.
We have seen slaughter rates increasing. In terms of weekly slaughter, we're still running a little bit below where we were a year ago. But, you know, we've seen the rates of slaughter per day increasing, though they remain below where they were pre-COVID-19. To some extent, they're using Saturdays as a swing. So, you know, the industry has been making strides at getting back to where they had been. But, again, you had cattle which were backed up in feedlots because there was, you know, there wasn't slaughter capacity available for them. And those, the industry still has to work through those large numbers of animals.
Shagham says as of July 1st, feedlots with 1,000 head or more capacity had inventories the second highest on record. And he says right now there are about 1% more cattle outside feedlots ready to come in than there were a year ago. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. And the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Summer Business Meeting wraps up today in Colorado. This week, the Beef Industry Long Range Plan Task Force officially introduced its new five-year plan for 2021 through 2025. The task force mission is to ensure the long-term prosperity of the U.S. beef industry. Of course, this plan is updated every 5 years and is designed to help the beef industry establish a common set of objectives and priorities. The new plan does include a variety of key priorities and core strategies that the task force encourages other beef industry businesses and organizations to utilize as input for their own strategic decision-making processes. If you'd like to see the complete beef industry long-range plan and learn more about this plan, simply go to this website, beeflongrangeplan.com. That's beeflongrangeplan.com. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
Female producers in Santa Barbara, Ventura, and San Luis Obispo counties will have the opportunity to network and knowledge share with other farmers in an upcoming virtual event hosted by American Farmland Trust. The two-part event, called Climate Stressors and Solutions, Your Land, Your Leadership, will be held on August 5th and August 12th from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. via Zoom. Kara Heckerts, AFT's California Regional Director, says, quote, "Farmers can see firsthand that climate change is occurring, so they need to help transitioning to environmentally sound agriculture that conserves resources and protects resilient food sources." She added, "Women farmers, however, are often overlooked, underappreciated, and underserved. They experience gender bias and rarely have access to technical materials. AFT's Women for the Land initiative is about learning the barriers that women farmers face, engaging with women landowners about conservation, and providing technical assistance and policy reform to better serve women." Female farmers make up 30% of the nation's producers. There are more than 46,000 female farmers here in California. To learn more about AFT's Women for the Land talks and to register, visit farmland.org. And it's time again for us to head out to a quick break, but we'll be right back with more of the day's Farm City News Day by AgNet West when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. And now here's Taylor Hellman.
Today's specialty crop news brought to you by the Almond Board of California. You can find them online at almonds.com. Almond grower dollars have been going to dust reduction research for over 15 years. That research now includes off-ground harvesting, which the Almond Board of California believes is an intricate part of their Almond Orchard 2025 goals. ABC's Sebastian Saw said they look at off-ground harvest as a stepwise process, and dust reduction research has produced substantial progress in the practice and other incentive programs for the industry. We're talking with the Almond Board of California's Sebastian Saw. Sebastian, new title. You are now the Associate Director of Agricultural Research. Congratulations. Thank you for taking some time with us today.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, new title, but the same person. So happy to talk today. Yeah.
We're talking about off-ground
harvesting. And this is something that my listeners are familiar with, but just for those who are not, this is something that happens outside of California. I know that you guys have taken, ABC's taken a couple trips to see this done. This happens in some other areas, and the ultimate goal is to see if this can be something that's adopted here in California. But off-ground harvesting is a thing, and we need to see if it'll be usable here in the state.
Yeah. So yes, we have explored outside of California off-ground harvest. This is a practice that it's implemented in Israel, for instance, part of Spain, and even in California with the pistachio industry, they harvest all of their pistachio crop off-ground. And we have been looking into off-ground harvest because it will definitely help us to reach our OCHA 2025 goal, reach 50% dust reduction during harvest. And we really see in off-ground harvest, again, a potential for dust reduction, but also benefits that go beyond dust. So we think that if for whole industry, it's able to move to an environment where you harvest off-ground, meaning that you check and catch and those almonds do not touch the ground, then there is also room for things like potentially less herbicide use, improved soil health, ability to use cover crops all year round, so fewer field passes, and a bunch of different potential benefits. Some of them we have looked into it, other ones we plan to look into it. Yeah, definitely off-ground harvest is something that we look very carefully into our research program.
Yeah, it's a good point to mention pistachios because, it's not that foreign. There's a whole nother nut crop that's basically, not letting it touch the ground either. So definitely we've talked to Brian Walbrink in the past of Sperry Farms, who I know has been involved in some of that research. Now, you guys are continuously looking at this, and I know that you guys had a planned event this year, obviously, because of the situation, you guys had to cancel it. But we were looking at doing some of this research this year for this harvest to move forward.
Oh, yeah. Well, Brian, he plays a great role in our harvest work group. He's the chair of our harvest work group. And in that harvest work group, we have most of the California manufacturers that work in low dust equipment, conventional harvest equipment, as well as off-ground harvest equipment. There are now four off-ground manufacturers in that roster, and with them we all discuss about what we're going to be doing this year, what are the research projects that we need to fund, and what are the barriers of adoption for off-ground harvest. And as you point out, we were going to do a demonstration event as one of the different projects. And we wanted to do a demonstration event in off-ground and as well as in low-dust equipment. We had to cancel that given the COVID-19, but we continue with the other projects. We still have it in the orchard experiments where we are evaluating how to dry the almonds or how to stockpile what will be a product that is wetter that comes from off-ground harvest, and looking into different orchard configurations and so on. So we have a significant amount of research going on to understand with practical, in the orchard, with practical experiments, how off-ground harvest affects our current practice. So we will be in the orchard again. It's just we're not going to be doing this demonstration event that we had planned because of the COVID situation. But that's not so fully canceled. We're just putting it off for the next year. And we're going to do actually some video recording that we're going to launch during our conference as well.
Good. Glad to hear that. And you mentioned two things right there. One, obviously, at the beginning, you talked about how off-ground harvest it's one of those tools that can be used for that 2025 goal of reducing dust by 50%. And also the fact that the configuration of our orchards here in California might be part of that issue of making that work. So how much research are you guys putting into this? I mean, is this something that's taking up a significant amount of these grower dollars that are going towards the research?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for sure, we do some research, but for sure, we are very careful with the amount of money that we allocate in this area. And that's why we have our stakeholders. That's why we have this work group and we have our Strategic Ag Innovation Committee, so we can spend the money wisely on what is really needed as an ABC investment. We have currently allocated a little bit over $1 million in research projects during the last few years. And some of these projects have ended. Other ones are multi-year project that continue and will end soon, and we may do more allocations for the next calendar year. I would say we see this journey toward off-ground harvest as a stepwise process. We believe that our industry will transition to this journey by steps. And the portfolio and the strategic view, the research that we do, it follow that logic, those steps. I would say 10 years ago, we started funding, or even 15 years ago, we started funding research to understand dust and to understand and to develop better best management practices around dust with conventional equipment. That's how we developed the best management practices that our growers use today. Then we evolved into low dust equipment research and conventional harvesting that has the ability to produce less dust. And that evolved into incentive programs. So the return on investment in that sense has been great. Our growers now have incentive program from the NRCS or for the San Joaquin Air Pollution Control District for low dust equipment, which is also another branch that's going to help us to reach our goal. And then circling back to this off-ground journey, I think it's going to take time to get to fully off-ground, but I see our growers adopting by steps, perhaps semi-off-ground harvest first, where they catch and reallocate to the middle of the row. And as we learn together with the research experiment how to better handle the product, we may migrate to a fully off-ground system in the future. So it's really interesting journey by steps and being very careful with the dollars that we put on.
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds like, using it in the right ways, too. And as you mentioned, in the meantime, that research has also gone into low dust equipment, which there are incentives from NRCS and the Air Quality Control Board. So you can find out more information on those at almonds.com. And you can always contact your local NRCS offices. Again, ABC, Sebastian Saw. Sebastian, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Have a good day.
Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Taylor Hillman.
Thanks, Taylor. And it's that time again for another break. We'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds. And we're back with more of the day's Farm City News Day. Right now, AgNet West Taylor Hillman chats with Tom Orvis, who's the Governmental Affairs Director for Stanislaus County Farm Bureau. They chat all about the unsolicited seed packages that have been arriving in mailboxes across the country.
Tom, we're talking today because there's a story going around, several reports about some seeds being mailed directly to people, and they have a Chinese address on them. And this is kind of odd. We were looking around and contacting some farm bureaus to see if they got any reports, and you just got one just recently, right?
Yes, Taylor. I myself hadn't heard about it until I saw it on social media, but just a few minutes ago, we received our first call about these seeds from a member in eastern Stanislaus County, and they have received four packets of these seeds. I don't know if it was one shipment, four shipments, or two shipments, but they have received over the last week four packets of the seeds. So this is new to us and new for us hearing about it.
Yeah, definitely. The interesting thing in this occurrence is the member that you're talking about, she actually used her addresses a little bit differently so she can tell what's going on. This isn't the specific address she uses for her home, right?
That's correct, Taylor. Our member does e-commerce online, and with all of her vendors, she changes her address just a little bit so that she can check and see if those online vendors may be selling her information to others or if they're using it. And coincidentally, the address on these packets all came back to one very major online retailer that we all know.
Yeah, we won't use their name, but it is someone everyone is very familiar with. That is what's very interesting. We've had a couple of the reports around California, and it seems like everyone's saying contact your ag commissioner, right?
Yes, we contacted our ag commissioner immediately, and we referred our member to our ag commissioner. Our ag commissioner has said that definitely get in touch with them. They will take possession of the seeds, and they are organizations such as yours. They want to get the word out, and I think California Department of Food and Ag is echoing the same thing, that if people come into possession of these seeds, please contact your local ag commissioner and get them to them, and they will take it from there.
Yeah, I this could be nothing, right? This could be not a big deal, but you never want to be taking and planting something that was mailed to you directly from somewhere else. There's a bunch of sanitary, phytosanitary concerns in doing something like that.
Yes, I mean, look at the rules and regulations our farmers have to jump through when we export to other countries, and this just shows up in the mail. It could be something as simple as poppy seeds or something like that, a flower, but at the same time, California's agriculture industry is way too large and way too valuable, and too many people are involved to risk, exposing it to an invasive pest or invasive seed of some sort. I mean, why do we have the dogs at the airports running around the carousels to check people's packages? We want to stop things before they get into the country, and maybe somebody's tried to find a different way to get in our country.
Very good, sir. Stanislaus County Farm Bureau, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow Agnet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgnetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgnetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgnetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.